What is up, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Anti-Gravity Group podcast. My name is Braden Carlson.
My name is Taylor Jesse.
My name is Shane, or as you might know me, Posthart.
And today, episode number 21, we've got another guest, the fellow Rocket podcaster, actually, and the model rocket guy himself, Jesse Ulibarri. How are we doing today?
Hey, guys. What's up with everyone?
Well, you know, we're just doing the thing. I have to say, I know I ask every single time, but I am saying your name correctly, right?
It's Ulibarri, Barry, I guess. But if you want to be like the original Basque version, like if you guys are cool enough to rattle your R's, it's Ulibarri. So just put a little bit of Chewbacca in there and you'll be all good.
I'm not that cool. So
I will butcher that. I guarantee
That's why on our show, we just say Jesse U because, you know, nobody wants to pronounce Ulibarri, you know?
Yeah, that's what's actually interesting is Shane and I are from Idaho. There's like a really rich Basque culture there. So I've heard a lot of good Basque food out there. The Basque style chorizo was like a staple of me growing up.
That sounds good. Might have to go out there. So.
Well, the company that made the best ones, Gem Meatpacking Company, just went out of business. But it was just like this old Basque couple. They were like in their 80s and they're finally like, guys, we got to wrap it up. This is it.
We're tired.
And of course, Basque chorizos are what everybody comes to a rocketry podcast to hear about. But I think maybe we should switch the topic to rocketry. So we just wanted to have a general chat for you to introduce yourself. We can talk about your business and everything, but we'll start from the very beginning. What is your earliest recallable context for getting into rocketry in general?
Earliest, Mr. Buffalo's shop class. He taught rocketry because you got to learn
cool building
techniques somewhere. So my first rocket was an Estes Viking, and it wasn't the popular green and yellow one you see nowadays. It was the old school one with a white body tube, a red nose cone, and it came colored that way. So I don't even think I painted my rocket, and it had actual decals that had a little Viking dude like in blue down to the bottom. I think Mark Hayes can recreate those. I don't know. We might have to build a 4-inch version at some point, but
I was gonna say you build a huge one. That'd be sick.
Yeah.
Estes Viking with the five fins, right?
Yeah.
But, everybody and their dogs built a Viking. And if you haven't, then just, you know, hit me up. I'll give you one because I got like 40 of them, but yeah, we can,
those educator bolt pack deals cool. Just hit different.
So that was my earliest. Yeah. So seventh grade shop class. And then after that, I kept building rockets up until I got into high school. Then, you know, I turned 16, got a car. After that, I didn't care anymore. But before that, in my astronomy class, which I believe was when I was a sophomore, that's when I built a Comanche 3 and actually like launched it on our gym field, which was just, you know, half of a football field where, you know, go out there and play soccer and stuff. And that was gone. So I never saw it again.
Yeah, you do all three stages. Yeah, no shot. Yep. You saw that again. Yeah,
D12-7 to what, C60 or D12-0 to C60 to C67. It was gone.
Yeah.
That was pretty fun, though.
Long gone.
I was into building aesthetically, you know, making sure. Sorry, my cat's rolling around here, guys.
No, you're good. So we have Nigel the Rocket Cat, too.
Yeah.
Oh, like cats on this podcast. Somewhere?
All right.
Cat-friendly podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, Comanche 3. Back then, I was hell-bent on making sure that everything was painted the way that the card was, the flash details. So I made sure that was painted the red, orange, or whatever the original Comanche 3 was, made sure the decals were flawless. I even blotted them out and made sure everything looked pretty. Did a lot of school pictures for that. The next big rocket that I built that was a big thing for me was the good old Saturn V. And I probably was like 14 years old when I built that thing. There's pictures all over my hometown in the newspaper of that rocket. And I actually found a picture of me standing with that rocket when I was like 14 years old. And you guys think I look dorky now, you should see that picture. I'll find it for y'all. And I'm standing there with my nephew and I'm like standing and holding, you know, the capsule or the escape, you know, the whatever, the tip of the nose cone with my one hand while, you know, the rocket's standing there by my little nephew. So that was a good thing. There's a whole story on our podcast and I'll tell you guys about that in a second. But throughout high school, went to college. When I went to college, I was in the Dallas area, Dallas-Fort Worth. Then that was in the 90s at that point. And that's when we started noticing that Walmart was starting to sell rocket kits. So I kind of rekindled my building for rockets then. And one of the guys that I used to kind of like jam out with and, you know, kind of do band stuff with, him and I started building rockets just on the side. And like, we'd go and jam guitars for a little while. And then after that, we would go to the park and launch rockets. And I remember one particular time, I don't know why I'm going on tangent with this, but there was a police officer that rolled up, and we literally had just launched all of our rockets and lost them all because, you know, it was windy or just whatever. And the guy's like, I heard you guys are shooting off bottle rockets. What are you guys doing? And I showed him my Estes pad, my launch controller. It's like, sir, we were, but we lost all the rockets. Like, well, those sound like bottle rockets to me. And like, we got in trouble for that. So that was pretty hilarious. But
yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah. But he wanted going back a couple weeks later, and we actually were able to recover a couple. And then he saw what we were talking about. So, and that was back in the day when Estes was doing the ready to fly kit. So it was easy for us to just go and use a couple of, you know, tubes of stinky tester's glue and put those together along with some, you know, wood glue and just get those built right away. Those right. were fun times. I remember the 90s very well. And then I stopped, opened up a Burger King franchise with my family, started doing all that stuff. And then back in 2016, so recent as of recent, my nephew Jacob and I, and this is when he was a little kid, like now he's like, you know, 20 years old. But back then, you know, obviously he was way younger. He was, you know, just becoming an adolescent. And it was kind of cool because him and I went to a Michael's and we got a starter set. I'm like, oh, let's build this. It was the 4th of July. So he was all excited about firecrackers and everything at first. And then when we got that rocket, he's like, can we do the rocket? Can we do the rocket? And like, okay, let's look at it. And it was the one with the Rascal and the Hijinks. I can't remember what set that was called, but we built those up real quick. And we went to the park, and I still had some old engines. They were old, man. I mean, I had those from the 90s, and we launched those rockets on those engines, and it was, you know, the most glorious thing in the world. And then that's when I figured out that there was mid-power rockets, high-power rockets. I had never known that there was anything larger than a D. And now I'm level 3, host of the Rocketry Show podcast, along with CG and Jim. And you guys probably have heard of those guys. And I'm a big influencer on social media. I got to the point where I got so into rocketry that now I resell rocket stuff and parts and kits and just what have you. I'm a local vendor in Colorado and neighboring states as well. So it's kind of funny how things start off when you just kind of rekindle as a third, you know, generation born again rocketeer. So that's right. My story in short. So
yeah, it's for those who aren't aware, modelrocketguy.com, you have a lot of like vintage and out of production kits and stuff. There's always something interesting on there. I remember you had that BSD 4-inch Little John for a while. I had just bought one, and Taylor had already purchased a Little John, and you got it right after mine got delivered. So I tagged Taylor. I was like, dude, I can't do this. Like, there's no reason, but I want it so bad just because it's a BSD one. It was my first dual deploy rocket ever.
Yeah, that was kind of funny because those particular ones did come set up for dual deploy. And the recovery package was kind of obscure to me. I'd never seen like a recovery package. It was kind of set up the way that, you know, those were designed particularly. And that one did say that it was designed by Scott Binder. So that was before he sold it to the other Scott that I believe lived in Nevada. And then I don't remember what exactly happened with that history. You guys might know a little better. Oh, okay.
I actually do have a decent knowledge of the recent what happened with that company because I incidentally, he commented on one of my YouTube videos and he's like,
oh, that's crazy.
I have a bunch of old AMW motors from stock. Does anybody want them? And I'm like two hands in the air. So when we went to Las Vegas for SEMA, Shane and I picked up the entirety of his remaining AMW stock.
Oh, wow.
So I've sold a decent amount of them because I was like, this is a stupid amount of money. And it was one of those like buy it all or don't buy any of it kind of deals. Gotcha. So, I think he would have split it up, but it would have the deal for buying everything. I was just like, I think I got to do this. So don't ever catch me buying rocket motors, even though you know it's going to happen. I have enough rocket motors for the pace that I fly at to fly for like the next 10 years. But at any rate, He still owns BSD. He's retired. He's living in the mountains and living his best life, and I respect it.
There you go. Well, acquiring products from, you know, people that are no longer with us, and, you know, kids that have their parents' stuff that they inherited from even the 80s and the 90s. I mean, I come across that a lot here in Colorado because Colorado, as you know, is kind of the mecca for rocketry when it comes to model rocketry and some of the mid-power stuff. The biggest thing that I've wound up doing is not to compete with, you know, my brothers in Launch Lab Rocketry. You got Steve Navard. You got Toby from Ollie Ope Rocketry, and his Ollie Oop is actually supposed to be OOP, you know, out of production. So he specializes right. in that too. And then he's releasing his own kits too. He just released an SR-71 that I got to get my hands on, but I need to actually order it when he puts
it out. I did see that. Yeah. Selling one on the Rocketry Forum, I think.
Yeah. I want to build one of those. I mean, that just seems kind of cool because it's not Estus. I mean, everybody's built an Estus one at one time in their life. I hope. And if you haven't, you need to get on that. But apparently Matt has one. We'll talk about that later.
Does, yeah. Yeah, somebody offered him $10 for it in the comments. It's too bad we're here to defend him. Otherwise, he might have been like, that's a great deal, this old thing. Who cares? Yeah.
And then, of course, we have Don Chaney with Everdon Rocketry out of Canada, and he does a lot of out-of-production stuff, you know, from that region. So we have a lot of people who are reselling some of those things. And my stock, I just try to, you know, put out there because one of the reasons that I got into this is because, honestly, guys, I got pretty sick there a couple of years back, and I was to a point where I didn't want my wife to inherit all this rocketry stuff. And I had, you know, thousands of dollars worth of stuff, just like I'm sure you guys do. And I started taking it to launches and I started selling it. And
right.
I remember just in a separate conversation, not even related to that, Jason Turasek from Locke, he's like, you know what, you'd be a good vendor. Because every time, you know, and Braden, you know, because, you know, every time we go to AirFest or, you know, just any big event, I always hang around the Locke tent. I'm always there. And people will come up and, you know, Jay, Dave, and, you know, whoever will be busy or whatever. And I'll stand there and I'll start talking to other people. Some people who don't know anything about rocketry just happen to be there with family or friends or relatives. And then I start talking to them. And then I walk over to, you know, Chris's Rocket Supply or AMW or just wherever. Even, you know, Tim from Wildman has taken some Locke stuff to his tents. And I'll say, okay, well, you want this one, you want this one, you want this one. Let's walk over here. Chris Short has Quest starter sets. You can have a launch pad here. Here's some motors from AMW. You know, AMW has these big Berthas on sale for $10. I used to go to all the vendors and, you know, help people kind of select stuff. And, you know, at that point, Dave and Jason were like, you know what? Yeah, you'd represent us well. You know, if you're interested in doing that, maybe you should get on board with us. So yeah, a couple of years back, I decided to go ahead and just pull the trigger, went and got a, you know, sales tax license and resale license and started a, becoming a vendor. I sell a lot of Mad Cow stuff, obviously, you know, hooked up with Tim from Wildman. I'm able to get, you know, Colorado NSL last year. It was crazy. I had several thousand dollars worth of fiberglass kits. I sold almost all of them. It was pretty nice.
Wow. We're actually Colorado coming NSL. This year.
Okay. I was just going to ask you guys that. So
Alamosa.
That'll be great. 52,000 feet. Let's put some stuff up.
Yeah. I just, it's on the Patreon right now and the video will probably be out before this podcast. If not, here's a leak for you guys. I just got a Wildman Falcon 98 delivered. Our good friends at Great Western Buildings are sponsoring a cool corporate rocket for them to when I get it back, not if they're gonna take it and just kind of hang it up and have it as a showpiece. But yeah, super cool. And I had planned to cut it down, but if I cut it down as far as I wanted, that thin Colorado air in the N1000 is gonna put me over the waiver. But yeah, Taylor has a cool project. We're stoked about it. I love a nice high waiver in a big open field like that.
I see the layout here on Patreon, so make sure you guys go look at that. That's going to be cool.
Yeah. Though I wasn't ready for the fins to be 2x2 twill like stock. Mm. They're so nice looking.
They do good work, man. I mean, but the news that you guys just put out a couple of episodes ago, I mean, everybody's, you know, tuning into that and everybody's, you know, chiming in about how good that's going to be. I'm excited, you know, for everything that's going to happen with Wildman and seeing stuff like this and just, yeah, I mean, I can tell the quality is just amazing on that. My buddy Wants a Dio and Jesse, we call him Nifty. They launched a rocket for ULA last year that was created by Wildman. As far as parts go, Wildman cut the fins for them. They look nice like those do, and boy, they were the start of the show. So maybe you guys can beat their altitude record. I think they got nearly 30,000 feet. So there you go.
Well, as long as I can almost guarantee I will beat that in altitude, but to qualify, that has to come back. And it's going to. It's going to. I just have a recent track record of my minimum diameter stuff not having parachute-based recovery. So
is that HED? We're working on it. Is that going to be head-end deploy?
It is, yeah. It's actually, initially the plan was to fly to Black Rock, so it was going to get cut down as much as we possibly could and do piranha line cutters, everything in the nose. But if we go that setup, courtesy of that thin Colorado air, it's simming quite a bit over the waiver. So we're going to nerf it a little bit and leave it a little bit longer. So it would leave the room to do a standard head end deploy setup, which the simplicity might benefit that project from the recovery standpoint. But, you know,
you know, pushing the limits responsibly is always the cool thing. And I appreciate that you guys all do that. So interesting fact that everybody might know. What was it? A couple of AirFests ago, weren't we all like sitting together kind of eating dinner once and it just kind of happened that way?
Yeah, at the Mexican restaurant in Wellington. Right. That place rips, dude. That place in the middle of Kansas. Amazing Mexican food. It is really good.
I was sitting next to Gary Rosenfield. Oh, I'm sorry.
Absolutely stupid sized margaritas.
Oh, yeah. Every year we kind of forget how big they are, and then we order the large ones.
We're like, do we get medium or large? God. Or small or large? Well, let's get the large ones. And you're like, oh, this is a quart of
strong margarita.
I remember sitting with Gary and Teddy and Teddy's wife, Sandra, and we were sitting there, and you guys walk in. And I was like, come over here. So that was cool. It's kind of funny how the world's so small in our hobby, yet we're all so far apart. I mean, Kansas City, that's still what, like 9 hours from me. So, I mean, that's kind of where you guys are from, right? Taylor, and then where are you guys at, Braden?
We're from Idaho. We live in Southern California now. So, yeah, it's a 25-hour drive to Taylor's house.
Okay. Jeez.
And how many times did we go last year, Postart? Four?
I think four. Yeah.
Drove. Wow. Well, geez. Yep.
A lot of miles on the old Ford Fiesta.
Three, I think.
No.
We flew in.
And
for
I know you
New
guys
Year's.
Fly back and forth to see each other too.
The
20 coasters and stuff.
Yeah.
So we not, drove I've listened three, to your but podcast. We flew in once.
Jeez. Oh, that's good. I mean, how many times have you guys went out there to each other's homes to build rockets and stuff yourselves? I mean, that's a lot.
Oh, that's Taylor's house is the congregating point because he has the garage to support something like a 12-inch Punisher.
Right.
We don't. So we all meet up there, plus him and Matt are from Kansas City and they're close. So yeah. We just
and being semi close to Argonia makes it a reasonable place to go fly big projects and stuff. So
right. And that's always a 50,000 foot waiver. So you always have a little bit of wiggle room and then you can always call in something when you guys do something big. Okay. No, that makes a lot of sense to me. I'm pretty happy with our clubs here in Colorado. My home club is SCORE, which is Southern Colorado Rocketeers, located in Pueblo. NARAM 60 back in 2018 was held there. They're going to actually hold NARAM 65 there this year. And their standing waiver is 12,000 feet, but we're actually going to do, you know, the modeling competitions as well, you know, for the model rockets and, you know, the qualifiers for the, you know, world championships will be held there. And then, you know, they always do like the contest for, you know, the best well-built rockets and stuff like that. So NARAM this year will be huge in Pueblo this year because this is supposed to be where Vern Estes kind of calls it quits. He's going to go to this one. And because it's held in Colorado and that's where Vern is from, and they actually moved it to our location this year where it was originally going to be at a different site, but they are taking up NARAM 66, you know, next year so that Vern can, you know, go to this one this year and, you know, say not goodbyes to everybody, but just like say, okay, I'm going to
I'm
you
done
here. And then, you know, after that, you know, if you see me around, you see me around. So we're excited because we got NSL and Alamosa, just like what you guys are talking about with that 52K waiver. And that's held over Memorial Day weekend. Then we got NARAM, you know, I believe in August, and that's the, you know, the week event. It's Saturday through Friday. So we're excited about that. And then that same club, they're doing another ULA launch where the students, you know, not, but like the interns for ULA, will go and do their projects in those big rockets that they put up, and they always put those up in big O motors. So that's always a fun event. And then we have what's called the Chili Blaster, which is held around the time of the Colorado State Fair. Pueblo is known for its chilies. I mean, you got, you know, New Mexico chilies, and then you got Pueblo chilies. And obviously I'm being from Colorado. I have to eat those Mexican green chilies. So we have an actual, you know, event called Chili Blaster. And, you know, it's a 2-day event that we have, and that's usually pretty big for our club. So this year alone, Colorado is going to have a lot of geek events, but that's just that one site. We also have my local site that's just north of Denver called Crash. Then we have Tripoli, Colorado, which is held in Hartzell. A couple of LDRSs have been there from time to time. We have Cos Rocks, which in Colorado Springs, that's about 40 minutes south of me, which is very close to where Apogee Components is located. And then we have a Northern Colorado Rocketry, which actually has two sites. They have the Atlas site that's located up north. And that was actually an old Atlas missile site. So that's kind of cool because we get to launch there, you know, sometimes in the winter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then the Pawnee Grasslands is also a huge Tripoli prefect as well. And they have, Tripoli and NAR. And I'm not going to lie, I think it's a 20,000 foot waiver, but, you know, I apologize. We don't get to go up there very often because since it's on, you know, state land, we always get fire banned. So it's been a while since we've been able to fly there. But I mean, when we are able to go out there, I mean, we crowd that place and there's always more than 200 people there every time. So it's great. Colorado's a great place to fly. So just having these national events in our backyard is always a big deal for us. But since I'm only 7 hours away from Argonia, I make it out there as often as possible. I was out there 4 times last year. So that was always a blessing. I got to see Taylor a few times. So it's always cool to meet up with you guys when we're out and about.
Yeah, we love Argonia. That's it was always because my introduction to high power rocketry was the Discovery show where they did LDRS-22. Taylor, right. Are you familiar with that launch?
That was my first LDRS.
Look at that. Wow. Man, was how old were you actually? I don't know if we've ever actually. Yeah,
that's, I was 9. Yeah,
I call him the Rocketry Forrest Gump because his grandpa used to just take him to every rocket launch or like every LDRS. So every like crazy project you can name through the early 2000s, he's like, "Yeah, I saw that. I was there." It's absurd.
Yeah, we had a run of going to LDRS pretty much every year from 2003 to 2010 or 11.
Cool. Even went to the Canada one.
Yeah, we just didn't go out east because we're like, well. You know, like our local clubs based like Cloudbusters, so like it's kind of a downgrade. I mean, it was just a long drive. Like we wanted to drive and fly some rockets. So
you really want all the cool, East Coast people to come after you with that one? Like, it's a downgrade. Yeah. Those clubs really suck.
But tell them why though. Like, why are they a downgrade? I mean, I know why, but
well,
it's waiver, right?
I mean, for us at the time, I don't know. There's a lot of trees and lower waivers and
has anybody been to
Blast? I think at the time we wanted to see big projects and we weren't sure if there were going to be big projects out there. I mean, we were flying level one stuff mostly at that time. So like it wouldn't have been a big hindrance to us, but I think it was more of the lure of what are we going to see at LDRS? And we weren't guaranteed if we drove 20 hours or whatever that we were going to get the LDRS that we wanted. So, but on the other hand, we went to Canada, which I don't really know why. That was a weird LDRS.
I guess I would have went. I mean, they did something big like that now. I would totally try to go. But I'm not going to make it to Potter, New York this year for LDRS. And if I tell you guys why, I hope you understand, but I'll tell you why. My favorite band is playing here in Denver. And yep. I got to see them. And,
that's a good reason.
Yeah, I can't make it to New York. I mean, I would have to try to hitch a ride with James Russell or somebody or fly out there myself and rent a car, which is ridiculous at this point. I mean, Braden, you know, preach on that one.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, but, I will be there and I will be flying out there and renting a car. So,
yeah. So that's going to be a little tough for me, but I'll stay here this time. But what I was getting about earlier is, you guys remember when, Steve Skinner and Ronald Dunn owned Mach 1, right? One of their things that they were sponsoring at the time was Bama Blastoff. Apparently, they had a pretty decent waiver. Wasn't it like 17K or something like that around the time?
Yeah, I'm not actually sure where that launch happened.
It's in Alabama, but
is that the club that used to be called PNW or PMW? Taylor, do you know what I'm talking about? Is where Bob Haas flew that 08,000?
Oh,
was that the same launch site?
I don't think so.
Okay,
but I don't know for sure.
If that answers your questions of whether or not any of us have been there, no.
Gotcha. I'm wondering if those clubs are still doing it. I mean, hopefully somebody can get to me because I do want to talk to somebody about that because the last couple of years, I know that hasn't been as advertised where, you know, with the Rocketry Show podcast, which is the podcast that, you know, I'm one of the third hosts for. We were sponsoring that for a while there, but last year there wasn't really much going on. But then again, last year we only put out, you know, 3 different podcasts because, you know, life gets in our way. But we apologize for that. But the Rocketry Show, I mean, little history on that. They started back in 2016 and it was just Jim and CG. And they had the other person with them, and you guys might know him as Daniel the Rocket Noob. And if you've ever done a lot of model rocketry history here in the last, you know, few years, he had a blog that was out and did a lot of training where, he's no longer really considered a noob. So I think it's funny that he still kind of takes that name, but we can't call him like, you know, the rocketry old guy, because it doesn't work that way. So, I mean, the rocketry noob is good. And now he hosts a podcast called The Model Rocket Show. That's kind of, it's not, I'm not going to say inactive, but we definitely are trying to pick that back up to work on that. And because a lot of model rocketeers used to listen to that particular podcast. And we're just, you know, trying to get to a point where we can start putting out some more shows and, you know, working with some other guests to get that, you know, back onto everything. That podcast is a part of the Rocketry Show. And I came on as a host in the Rocketry Show back in 2019. And then that's when we kind of put out the Model Rocket Show so that Daniel could go and host that one. And then I could sit in with CG and Jim and talk about some of the other stuff. Braden, obviously, I know that you've listened to that show, and I don't know if you guys have as well, but we've had tons of guests on that show from pretty much every aspect of, you know, regular rocketry to high power rocketry and everybody else in between. So one of the newest episodes that we're putting out is going to include Kip Durgadas, you know, who's done the flight that went almost to 300,000 feet. You know, Kip could probably actually get on you guys too, and you guys can talk to him about some stuff, because that's kind of your world. That's kind of where you guys kind of hang out too. And I always kind of think of you guys as, you know, upper rocketeers, because, you know,
I was going to say that's way above our pay grade.
He's a very different level.
But you want to know what's cool? And this is something, you know, preview for the podcast that we have coming out for him. He did everything. He did everything on a commercially purchased Wildman parts and things that you can easily accommodate. It's just mind blowing. And of course, he made his own motors and everything, but the story is very unique. And I can't wait to share that one with you guys, because I really feel like he enlightened me a lot, and, you know, just made it feel like, you know, we're already in this world with rocketry. Almost everything is possible. And then you got flyers like Jim Jarvis, who's just been an inspiration to all of us, I'm sure. And every time that guy flies something, just like one, two, three, and like, you know, seven stage rockets at Airfest just blows my mind. Like, everything stops when Jim flies.
Jim,
we've got to see.
It was one of those people. Oh, sorry. Jim is one of those people I used to, I had a list of people that I just badgered on emails when I was like 13 and 14. And I wanted to build a clone of his carbon fiber Big Daddy. So I emailed him all the time asking for all this stuff, and he always answered me. He did. I pestered Vern Knowles and Eric Gates, and all these people were nice enough to respond to me. But dude, two Rocket Cat episode is a rare entity.
Yeah.
You see this full back
but,
here?
But
sorry, Brad.
No, you're good. So my family ended up moving to Texas in like 2011. So we got to fly with Jim for a while, and I was, you know, 15 or whatever. And the first time I saw him at a launch, he had a two-stage rocket that he was like doing a shakedown fly for, and he handed the thing to me. And of course, I've read every one of his articles on making perfect carbon fiber. And like, I still just wasn't ready for how light it was. Like, this two-stage rocket felt like an Estes kit. And just everything, like Jim, too, is one of those people. The stuff is just unbelievably next level in terms of production quality. And he's just doing it all on his own. And yeah, he's got staged flight down to a ridiculous science. It's crazy.
I love the huge staging delays.
Yeah.
Just be like, oh, man, it didn't light. And then it fires up like 10, 12 seconds later.
Yeah. I believe he holds the record for the highest flight ever in Argonia. And I also believe under Bob Brown's orders, nobody's allowed to try and beat it. he pushed it a little hard. He didn't break the waiver, but people are discouraged from trying to take that title away from Jim.
I can only aspire to be at that point. But, you know, truth be told, guys, the last rocket that I built was my Skinwalker, and that was in August of 2021. So I've been so busy trying to put up inventory and collecting stuff to resell to people that I've kind of put my stuff on the back burner. I've built some rockets in between that never got finished or just needed paint, but I haven't flown anything since my Goblin, I believe, was March of last year. So I need to get on that. So yeah,
it is the old vendor trope. Every one of them say, once you start selling rockets, you stop flying rockets, with very, very few interruptions in that being the case. But Yeah, speaking of pretty carbon fiber, your skinwalker is everything's carbon fiber, isn't it?
So, yeah, the fin can is wrapped in carbon fiber. It's a seven and a half inch. I'm not going to tell you the model, but it's a four fin, something that, you know, Locke has had out for a while. I laminated the fins in carbon fiber, and I just didn't do the edges very well. At some point I will probably try to wrap those in carbon fiber, but there's not really a way to do that on the rocket now. So I'll probably just seal them really good. They are still wood though. So there is a chance that if it falls particularly perfect, it could delaminate because the wood could split apart because they are plywood fins, but they are also those big, thick 3/8 inch fins that, you know, they have in the Iris that you guys have talked about and all these other rockets that are similar. That rocket separates into four parts. So you got 2 30-inch tubes for the booster. And the reason I don't have those together is so that I could put them in a small car like my wife's Volvo and drive them somewhere. So those 2 30-inch tubes actually connect together, and then I can take them apart and then even just extend it or just do whatever I want to with that. But the fin can is one whole unit. And that way I can actually lay it down or stand it up in the bed of my truck and then take it from A to B. So I tried to get a little bit creative on that, whereas my level three rocket, which was also a 7.5-inch upscale of basically a Thor or a Mystic Buzz, those fins are so huge, I can't even close the cover of my truck with those fins. So I kind of learned, you know, how to arrange that booster. But yeah, just the bottom half of that is carbon fibered all the way around. And thing about my carbon fiber job is that the finish of the laminate when I pulled off the Mylar is the finish of the rocket. So it's not painted. It just looks awesome like that. I can give you all some pictures if you want to see them. It still has Kansas dirt from that launch that I did at that AirFest.
Yep.
So
you cannot get Taylor when he built his rally car. He sent me pictures. He's like, the Arconia dust. He pulled the back seat out to build the rally car and just
so much.
Well, I'm not going to get rid of that dust. I'll just, clean off what's on the fin so it doesn't add more drag. But yeah, I plan on launching that again at some point. There's a lot of people threatening to try to drag race me at AirFest. So, you know, let's do it. But
yeah, you did something. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, the top of the sustainer, well, not sustainer, I'm sorry, it's not, but the payload and the second half of the booster are just wrapped into fiberglass, and then I painted that. So, and then I used one of those big, the nose cone that he's got on the back of his Sumo upscale right there.
Oh, Rick the Taylor. Sumo, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same nose cone. That's what I put. Yeah, that's what I put on this Skinwalker. And I can use a regular, you know, 7.5-inch lock nose cone, which is the 3:1 Ogave. I could do that too, but... that other one, like yours in the Sumo, I weighted it. So it's got 8 pounds of weight, so I can put it in it if I wanted to. So,
oh, wow.
Someday. And 3,000 sounds good on that rocket. I mean, it's been done before. So
how much weight is in your nose cone, Taylor?
4 pounds, I think.
It's a beefy boy. When I picked it up, I wasn't ready for it. Shane actually is building a 7.5-inch rocket that is also going to need some nose weight for sure.
Little John?
Yeah.
Is it a
Little John?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Awesome, man.
So we, Taylor and I, found a deal on some 7.5-inch phenolic tubes, and we bought a whole box of them. So
a box? Oh, man.
Yeah. I wasn't sure what I was going to use. Basically, it broke down to we each got four, and then we each got a 6-inch phenolic tube. And okay. I hadn't decided what I was going to do with mine yet, but now, unfortunately, one of them is likely going to be sacrificed to fixing my Honest John. But I'll still have to figure out something to do with the other one.
That sounds.
I think I'm going to do it.
Fun.
I got a 7.5-inch Nike Smoke nose cone, so I'm going to do a big Nike Smoke, and then maybe a upscale Big Daddy or something
to go with the Sumo.
Yeah, be a good. But combo. Yeah,
so I paused hard. Was like, I want to build a 7.5-inch Little John. I was like, well, I have great news. I have tubes for you and a nose cone. So
I'm trying to force Matt to take one of the last tubes. To build a big rocket, but I don't know if he's biting yet.
We'll get him there.
You know, at some point, there's 2 7.5-inch rockets I want to build. I want to build a Nike Zeus that's 7.5-inch because it's very close to your Iris, Braden. So, I mean, I'm thinking about doing something like that. And what I really like to do is build a 7.5-inch executioner and paint it stock like an Estes executioner, because I could do it. I mean,
that'd be awesome.
I just feel like... I'm going to toot my own horn. I feel I have one of the better executioner paint jobs of all the executioners that are out there. I mean, I made that thing as stock as absolutely possible. And there's pictures of that thing still. I've flown that little 2.6 inch BT-80 Estes rocket, I believe 26 times, and it still looks really, really good. And I built a couple of versions out of lock parts. I had a 4 inch that I did with red pinstriping, man, but I, you know, we'll talk about, you know, what happened to that rocket later. That was probably my worst disaster anyway. But yeah, 7.5 inch swept-back fins on a huge rocket like that. I don't know. That'd be kind of, you know, hard to keep those fins intact maybe, but
yeah. Yeah. That's what I was just talking to Shane about this. Cause what my 6 inch tube is going to be a 6 inch alpha, that I got decals for.
Oh man.
Like 14 years ago from Mark, and I still have them. And I made the sure when four, I moved right? out to California. Yeah. Well, you spoiled it, Taylor. Great.
Oh, sorry.
Now everyone's going to build one. No, I really love the Alpha 4, and it's like glittery red vinyl. It was the 40th anniversary
right.
special edition. And I hit up Mark with no money. This is a free plug for our friends in the industry. Mark Hayes at StickerShock23.com. No money as a 14 or 15 year old or whatever, asking, can you make this? He goes, yeah, I can order the stuff to do it. I don't have any in stock. And I was like, okay, well, I don't actually have any money right now. And Mark, being the good guy that he is, was looking at this 14-year-old with big aspirations. And he ordered it, sent me the decals, and said, pay me when you can. So had a lot of that in the hobby. But to get back on track here, the alpha fins are going to be quite a problem trying to keep those attached. People that know my channel know I don't have a great track record of keeping fins attached to rockets lately either. So,
but I mean, there's got to be a way that we can laminate those swept-back fins somehow. I mean, just, you know, vacuum wrap them or something like that, seal them, and then at least that edge would be good. And if we launched it somewhere like in Argonia or something, because a 7.5 inch executioner is essentially a longer alpha. The fins are a little bit different as far as the calculations and angles go, but they're very similar. I mean, I'm going to try it. We got to get that up on some kind of an M motor. Just, I think it would be a success. And it's not like it hasn't been done before, but all the fins have never really been swept. Yeah, Taylor's
Sumo
has. Oh, yeah.
The Sumo's pretty decently swept.
Yeah, it does have the tube, though, that kind of like ends up flush, but they're still big fins.
Is it going to land on their side?
I don't know. I mean,
yeah. Is it worth doing a thing like a Saturn V parachute job where you like kind of angle the parachute to come down so the rocket comes down on its side? Is it worth doing something like that?
Oh, God.
I don't think so, but I mean, it would certainly be an answer to that problem, I guess.
It's worth noting that Taylor's does have tip-to-tip glass. He kind of benefits from the fin placement on that. On an Alpha where it's swept back past the airframe, it's going to be a nasty fiberglass job or whatever else.
I wouldn't worry as much about the fin material breaking as the attachment. But
right.
I would probably do like angle brackets and stuff. Or deep in the woods. Do like where it interlocks with the centering rings.
Right. So
see, that was almost what I landed on with the Alpha, was like just embrace the fact that they're going to snap off and do brackets inside and just like slide the tube over. So when it just snaps off, I can throw another fin on it and call it a day.
Yeah.
That also solves the problem of the absurdly large fins that don't fit in anything except a big van.
Right.
Yeah.
Or a truck.
I drive a Ford Fiesta, but it is worth noting like your Skinwalker, the Iris from Locke is also 30-inch tubes.
Mm-hmm.
So it fits comfortably in my Fiesta. And actually, I got it into the point once where two people could have ridden in the car with me with
oh, wow.
that whole 12-foot rocket stuffed in there. It was tight, but I'm pretty decent at Tetris. So it worked right. out pretty okay.
But could you have brought anything to prep the rocket?
I did. I flew it.
Oh,
I had all my stuff.
Prep it.
Well, okay. Shout out Dave and Jay from Locke, as usual, because I brought it just to have it on display there because they were going to be there. And then I got there and they're like, what the hell? You don't plan on flying this thing? So they dug into the stash of the late, great Gloria Robinson and hacked up one of her 7.5-inch kits for the benefit of making that Iris fly and paid for a motor. And they were like, it's all business expenses. And now actually that rocket is on the Locke homepage. It's like their video that plays behind the logo.
Did you motor eject that?
Oh yeah, it was so sick. Right. I have a great video. I don't think it made it into the final video, but Dave is sitting there with a Lock Precision sticker, just wraps it around the ejection well and pours like 8 grams of black powder in it and then folds the sticker over. And we just made this like horrific 3-inch long ejection charge.
Oh, that's
it was okay. Awesome.
That's good stuff. See, these are the stories that I like to share. So these are good conversations.
I love Dave and Jay. They're fellow musician rocket people as well. There's actually quite a few of us.
You know, I've never seen Mike and Jay in the same room, and they're brothers. Every time I've met and hung out with Mike, I've never actually got to meet and hang out with Jay at all. Like, I've been to Airfest, Jay's there. LDRS, just, Mike's there, but never at the same time. So someday.
Huh. I'm trying to think of if I have either. I think maybe Mike and Jay were both at LDRS 40 at Lucerne, but I got COVID there and already like wasn't feeling phenomenal going into it. So half that launch, I'm convinced, was a fever dream.
that was in California. Yeah, so it was Mike and Dave at that launch.
Okay.
But I got a picture with you then at the banquet. So.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
dude, that was rough, man. Lucerne in July, getting up at 4 a.m. and by noon it's like a.
Well, you know, I remember Hell DRS, right, when it was at the Salt Flats. Was it the year before? Yeah. 39. Man, that the white, just it was so hot. And then I just remember the next year at Lucerne, it was even more hot. And I was like, but the
right
ground isn't quite white. Why is it so much hotter here? Was I don't know, man. Like. Heading out, but I would do it again. I mean, Airfest last year was hot as well. Like I was just sweating the entire time. I'm going to buy a different array of t-shirts I can wear. So just so it'll absorb everything. It's crazy.
Dude, Bonneville was honestly one of my favorite LDRSs. It was Pasta's first LDRS.
It was, and it was so good.
Taylor and I both got like welder's flash from the surface.
Right.
Taylor drove back to Salt Lake City in the rain, not being able to see.
That's what I learned about the importance of having, polarized lenses and not just cheap sunglasses.
It was a rough one. I had to like go to the medical tent, and they had like a bunch of, they were ready to, they knew it was coming. They had like a bunch of packets of Visine. They're like, yep, go sit in your car with your eyes covered for 30 minutes, bring sunglasses next time, idiot. I was so prepared too. I went to like Ross and bought some long sleeve white shirts, and Taylor and I bought some goofy rocket guy hats
with
flaps. We thought we were doing it right, and then just for day one to destroy my eyes.
And I made fun of him when I got there, like, oh, what, you burned your eyes? Ha, ha, ha. No, and then the very last day that I was there, all of a sudden went from completely fine to just, like, can't keep my eyes open at all.
Yeah,
and had to drive back to Salt Lake that day, and it was brutal.
Well, sunscreen. But, I mean, how do you put sunscreen on your face without having it drip into your eyes in that sun? It was crazy. I had to sit there with like a washcloth and keep dabbing my eyes because the sunscreen would just like run into them. It was crazy.
But I was using so much sunscreen too. The whole back of my camera was greasy from holding it into my face. And I was like, oh my God.
That LDRS is when I unofficially met Braden. If you remember, I was on the golf cart and I was like, I fly rocket.
Yeah.
That became part of the video. And I think your mom, she was there too. And she's like, good for you. Or something like
that. Good for you. Yeah.
So
yeah, that was my mom's only LDRS. Yeah. It was such a good launch. And that still one of my favorite videos that I've done just for the intro, because like, it looks like a green screen. You're like, there's no way what's behind me is like that perfect. And cause it was like 5:30 in the morning as the sun was rising.
Oh yeah.
I was like mystified driving out there. It was crazy.
Yeah. I remember those. Well, okay. So my profile picture on Teams at work was me standing next to my Mach 1 Alien Interceptor. That's a huge rocket. I got my arms out. And every time somebody looks at that, they're like, you were in the snow flying rockets without a jacket on? I'm like, no, man. That's not snow. That's salt.
Definitely not.
Then I had to explain to, you know, these people who've never seen snow, like what that is, and like salt. What are you talking about? Salt. And like, then I had to kind of go into that. It's kind of funny too, because those same people asking me those questions. I was there with my boss, George Tuma, and he had just got a different job. So the next year him and I were able to go fly rockets together because they didn't work with each other. So it was awesome. And he knows who all these people are. So every time I tell him that story, he's like, yeah, you need to send him this picture. Send him this picture. It's kind of funny that salt just reminiscent of snow just covering the ground. And man, I hope someday we can do it again because that was my first and only time on the salt. And, you know, Hellfire, I guess, used to be a big event, you know, that the club always used to put on. And
yep.
You know, that's something.
Yeah, it was iconic.
How many times I'd always wanted to go there
because we were, that was my one and only, I think all of us, right?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I grew up just like that was one of the launch, one of the iconic launches that happened every year. That's like, you know, I dreamed of going there. And so, you know, LDRS being there, and then we found out that was going to be like the last launch in Bonneville. So it's like, I got to go. Yeah. So I shipped my rocket to Braden so I could fly something when I was there. And so I checked that off the list of like getting to go to Bonneville and fly a rocket.
Well, that's when.
Yep. It was.
This is sad, guys, but that's when I actually learned about Gates Brothers was at that launch because, you know, they had representation kind of, you know, we got to see Porthos fly and, you know, just to see Bryce go and redo that stuff. It just mind blowing. I remember his post. It's like the feeling you get when you have so many, you know, 54, you know, inch, you know, 54 millimeter cases.
The whole drawer full.
Wow.
But, yep.
Yeah. Seeing that because Taylor and I, it was like bewildering to us that people didn't know who the Gates Brothers were because, you know, our 10 to 12 year old selves, that was everything to us. So we had like joked about a 12 inch Punisher because it's like Porthos size and we could have our own Porthos. And after we saw Porthos in real life was where everything started becoming very real for that concept.
And about within 3 weeks after that, we had a full-blown plan that we were all like not sure if we were serious about, but we totally were. And then 2 months later ordered a $400 nose cone. Right. So
well, I mean that sumo that he had, I mean, didn't it have like two 12 pound balls for weight, right? Like
I think it's 116 and 1 8-pound bowling ball. Yeah. Like those.
When I saw that, I just like got dumbfounded. Like I you know, walked back to my tent with my head down because I just couldn't believe that people could achieve stuff like that, you know. And just it was so well put together, like, and it was an awesome flight to see. Like everything stopped when those rockets went up. It was good stuff.
Oh yeah, a fun fact about that rocket actually is it was just built that way because they needed nose weight, but because of that, a category that's no longer a part of Tripoli rocketry used to be bowling ball loft records, and just circumstantially that rocket held the clustered O record for bowling ball lofting for the 16 ounce or 8 ounce class or whatever.
Wow.
Just because it happened to have them and they were like, let's do that. But
well, Argonia Cup here in a couple of weeks, we'll get to see a bunch of golf balls land. And I'm actually very excited for that because the rules changed again. And, you know, I think you guys were talking to Amy about that and she was explaining that the rules this year are going to be different. I'm excited to see it because I haven't been to one yet. So I'm excited to go this year.
Man, last year was crazy. Things have stepped up very quickly in the past, you know, few years from going from like, you know, people, the teams just kind of barely figuring out to like, fierce competition of like to the rule, like really dialing it in on stuff. And obviously there's, you know, different the objective changes each year a little bit. So but it's the golf ball thing this year should be interesting. There's I'm on the committee that's sort of reviewing the rockets for that now.
Oh wow.
And so I've seen all the designs and there's some really, really interesting stuff going on. Some normal rockets and some stuff where you're like, wow, that's technically within the rule set, but that's crazy.
Yeah, like the team boosting L2200 to a SS quarter A.
They actually upsized it to a C motor now.
They stretching out that maximum impulse?
Yeah.
I love the spirit of that, though. That's kind of like, that is the engineering student mindset to, I guarantee next year there's a minimum impulse per stage because they're just like, oh, we have the perfect workaround for that. I should also note that it looks like about 95% that I will be at Cloudburst and the Argonia Cup.
Okay.
Oh, really?
Yep. And I'm trying to drag Posthard as well. So we will see. We'll see.
Well, I just booked a hotel a few days ago, so the old Kubelstone.
Are you leaving Friday? The perfect podcast discussion is these plans.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I can, but I figured if I left Friday, I would stay in Wichita.
Okay, cool. All right, we'll situate it afterwards. If you want, Jesse.
Also,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, there looks like there's going to be a few big projects unrelated to the Argonia Cup there as well. So that's going to be exciting.
It has a minimum diameter big, O, right?
I believe so. Maybe two O. Well, no, the other one's not minimum diameter, but I think two O's and then an M two N to an M two stage.
Jeez.
Plus, and last then, year it was so big. It was a great launch last year.
Yeah,
an it was. L to an L two stage and K. Yes, I don't know. Justin Farron submitted some high altitude two stage stuff, so that's cool.
Taylor's gonna get busted for dropping these behind the scenes looks.
Yeah.
Well, all the more reason for people to go, honestly. So if you want to see a good show, get out
I'm
there.
I'm just hyping up the launch. I'm not saying anything that anyone else doesn't know. But they just didn't know you
were going to be part of the marketing team as well.
So it's interesting because Cloudbusters is having basically their monthly launch this weekend. It's going to be a 2-day launch. And then, of course, they're doing Argonia Cup, you know, the last weekend of March as well. So,
yeah.
So if you guys are in that area, you want to go launch some rockets, they're doing something this weekend too. The weather's supposed to be pretty good on Sunday. So there's a couple flights that are going up there.
I think they had to cancel the last 2 months. So I think they're making up for it this weekend. The weather, hopefully, it will be good.
Well, for Argonia Cup, I think I'm going to head out on probably that Thursday so that I can get there by Friday. Cause I think I'm going to be a vendor. I'm going to actually set up some stuff and I'm going to do what you said, Braden. I'm going to take all the obscure things that people need, like 75 millimeter, you know, motor mount tubes and centering rings and all the fun stuff.
Yeah. I was telling him last year about the team that came up to me after I flew or right before I flew my 5-inch Punisher that was asking to borrow my nose cone. If as long as I got it back, they're like, if we lose it, we'll return it. And because they somehow wound up needing a 5-inch nose cone. And the guy was like, hey, I watch your videos. Can I borrow your nose cone? I was like, yeah, I guess if it really comes down to that. And then I think Chris Short wound up having one on hand somehow. But yeah, they were desperately searching. And I was like, does anybody have a 5-inch nose cone? Tim, Chris, anybody? Because I just like their nose cone is replaceable, but the paint was such a nightmare on that rocket because it's a tri-coat color shifting.
Oh.
It was really expensive. So it's like, I just don't want to do that again, if I'm honest. But
I have a few things on hand. I have a 4-inch, 5-inch, and a couple ultimate nose cones, but I don't have anything really smaller or bigger than that. I don't have any 3-inch or anything. So I'll take what I got that's obscure, guys. If you're listening to this and you're a college team, you need some parts. Email me, let me know. I'll see what I got that I can get my hands on. You know, because like I said, Colorado's got an array of Rocketeers. They might be looking to sell some of their stuff too. So, you know, if you need something obscure, let me know.
Cool.
I do sell thrust plates as well. I know that this audience really, really loves thrust plates. So let's talk about that for a second. I'm just kidding. But for all intents and purposes, Scott Case does really good work. I mean, if anything about that, I mean, it's art. It really is art. So
they do look amazing. Yeah, we're just there seems to be an understanding that there's a threshold where it becomes required, and we are adamantly acting out against that concept.
Yeah, I don't agree with
we're
that
not
either.
So much that we're against thrust plates entirely, just that they're not needed.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
They look awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
on
every rocket I build, I put a thrust plate on, but obviously it's going to push your CG back a little bit. So you got to compensate for that. I mean, make sure you do your sims adequately or accordingly so that you make up for that, because the AeroPack retainer that connects to those and the lock retainers will connect to those too, by the way. But I'm just saying, like, you got to account for that. A lot of people don't do it. And then, you know, you wind up putting water bottles in your nose cone for your level 3. So, you know, make sure that you.
Dude, that is one aspect of those that I'm like, that sounds so nice. The pre-tapped screw holes for the AeroPack.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, we don't have anything against thrust plates. We just like to keep people informed that they're not necessarily a requirement when that question comes up. We're like, well, all of our tubes were flush on the 12-inch Punisher, and it was O impulse, and we're still here. But if you do need one, modelrocketguy.com. So I have a couple past topics that we like to bring up to guests if you'd like to field these. They're questions that kind of require some foresight, so don't feel rushed or anything to answer them. But the first one is just like, what is your ultimate, in with the realm of this hobby, what is your ultimate dream project?
Mine?
Yes, sir.
It's going to be probably a 12-inch executioner. A 12-inch diameter executioner. I mean, you guys know to require a nose cone, and or where you will be able to get one at some point, right? So that'll be the correct ogave. And even if it's not, it'll still look good, right? We know where to get the tubes. We know how we can make fins because I knew these one guys. These one guys, like they took like a foam core and made it, you know, and laminated it, and you know, made you know the out frame out of wood. I mean, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but it worked, and it sounds like a really cool idea. But I mean, it can be done. That's the point, right? No, good job on that. By the way, guys, it's good work, honestly. So
I was gonna say the one part we didn't leave in any of the videos because we didn't really shoot it per se was the amount of times we had laminated them and squeezed the foam and could still feel it. So there's a cut from the build series of that video where you see we did the tip to tip, and then just suddenly in the next shot, there's more carbon fiber on the fins. we were just like, yeah, you know, like just to be sure. The good news is they got a good test when Taylor had it sitting on the stands, the PVC stands that he made in his garage.
Oh my
and he
God.
Glued them. So it just collapsed and fell full weight onto the fins with motor cases in it. Oh, we were like, okay, it looks like they're good, I guess. But
yeah, it's been dropping a couple times.
Yeah.
It was a few.
But it's a great dirt plow, too. You get a C8 full of wind just dragging the 200-pound rocket.
Yeah, I mean, that first flight, you know, we had the central in that didn't light plus two of the outboards. And so our descent weight was like, I don't know, 40. Do you remember what it was, Braden? I don't know. 40
pounds.
It was
like 40 pounds more than we anticipated.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Luckily, our parachute was oversized, but I mean, that's still a lot of weight, even just like laying down, setting on the fins themselves. Yeah. So,
and then I have a picture of how far the parachute drug it, and like you when we got to the rocket, from the pictures people thought the fins had broken off because they were so buried in the dirt,
right?
And it had probably picked up like 200 pounds of dirt just stuffed in the fin can. So after that, we all became very confident in the fins.
We learned more in the 2 months doing that project than like we would have been able to doing so many other projects. It was pretty great, like stuff you don't understand till you have the ability to try to fly a rocket like that and you don't know what you're doing.
Well, after seeing
after seeing
Lock guys building a 12-inch diameter skinwalker and then seeing your guys' Punisher, it just made sense that other things could be achieved. And you know, you don't have to be kept, I mean, I can't even fathom, you know, a flight almost to 300,000 feet, but I mean,
right,
like a oversized rockets, stuff like that. Like one thing that CG and Jim always said is about me is that Jesse's always building something big. It never started out that way. My moniker name is Model Rocket Guy. I started out with these, dude, like tiny little rockets, right? And I still love them to death, and I paint them as much as I can to stock. But you know, hanging out with Jay and Dave, and then, you know, getting into all the bigger stuff, I was like, you know what, I can do this, and I've been able to prove it, and it's the fun part of the hobby. I love it. It's great.
Yeah. And I mean, for all intents and purposes, like a lot of people will comment on these projects and we are always like, yes, what you should take away from anything we post is grab your friends, have them bring their credit cards, don't ever look at the statements, and just build a huge rocket. But it's
the that's really the message we're trying to put out is yeah. If you can go build the biggest rocket you can with your friends and have fun.
But it's you know, like the 9-inch Arcus and the 12-inch Punisher are such, like, it's just we grew up in that era where people flew big, big stuff. And we see people like, I'm going to do this or a 16-inch this or whatever. And I'm like, I mean, I've 7.5-inch rockets are big. Like, there's no way around that they are large. So I'm like, if you want to build a big, fun rocket that is like the perfect, you can still manage it on your own. And especially if you go with a lock kit, you know, from modelrocketguy.com, you can, plus they make great Christmas trees. My 7.5-inch John's John is in our living room, just wrapped with lights.
Still as our Christmas tree.
They're plenty big enough to be inconvenient and impressive. And that's really all it boils down to with a huge rocket.
Yeah, boy, they sure are inconvenient. I don't recommend having more than one big rocket in your, well, I do actually, but. It's the storage part of it's not fun.
Yeah. Storage units would go a long way if you're going to go down that path. But yeah, it's like we love seeing like the skinwalkers and all that stuff. Just seeing people bringing out big rockets. We can appreciate the high altitude stuff. Yeah, I mean, I've got a couple projects, but at the end of the day, we just love a big, dumb rocket. Oh, it's always a good time.
I mean, no matter how much you want to not like it, it just makes you smile when you see a big, dumb rocket on a M1939 or whatever.
It's great.
You know, just a classic high power flight.
You know, I appreciate all the plugs, but for all the rocketeers, right? My biggest thing that I kind of got into with rocketry was building the aesthetic. Lock used a lot of my rockets that I did build. A lot of them are discontinued now, unfortunately, like the Big Nuke 4 and the Deployer. But those rockets that you saw on those particular pages were my stock rockets. Those were my paint jobs that they did their Photoshop to and put on their website, to sell some of those things. So I really appreciate that from Jay and Dave. That was always like my biggest thing. Getting into the podcast was just because I was getting out and about, going to different launch events and starting to learn people, know people, Gary Rosenfield, Chris Short, all those guys, and all you guys, and just being around and just rubbing elbows with everybody. I appreciate the plugs, but honestly, if you guys are in a position where you can get something, and especially if you're on the field and you're supporting your local vendors, please do so, because it's hard for those guys to kind of keep stock and make money. So when they got stock there that you can get your hands on, try to buy the stuff, initially from your local vendors. The main reason that I created an online site is so I'd have a good way to do inventorying and invoicing, because with Shopify, which is who I use for my, web platform, I did sign up so I can do point of sale too. And it's the easiest way for me to keep stock. But the biggest problem that I have with it is that I have only about a third of my actual stock on the Shopify website, where everything else has an individual price tag that I wind up using the Shopify point of sale to ring out. So even though I'm at the field, everything that I got on my tables may not actually be on the website yet. I'm still trying to work on that because, I do it by myself and I just do it part time, but I do have a full time job that I work a lot of hours for. So that's why it takes so long, but, always support your local vendors, always try to find something, from Wildman, from Tim, from Chris Short, from eRockets.biz, from Serious Rocketry, from Apogee Components, if you can. If you see me around and I have something that you need, then by sure, hit me up. I mean, I can offer discounts on some things, but, we do whatever we can to make sure that we just got the stock for people. My biggest thing is compatibility. Kind of like you guys know the history of rocketry, that, the stuff that you studied from when you were kids, where you know a lot of different people. That's how I feel about stock. I can tell you what Madcap parts fit with Lock parts. I can tell you what Mildman parts fit with Mach 1 parts. I mean, that's kind of what I specialized in, and that's what I understand. And it even got to the point where I have like Conway Stevens, you've met Conway Braden before, and that guy's a history, a mountain history, and so is James Russell, our TAP coordinator for, Tripoli. These guys, will go back and say, that's Giant Leap. That's Hawk Mountain. I'm like, what? You got all these other things now that I never heard of. So it's really cool.
I had a Dynacom Anaconda that I actually picked up from a guy who did his level 3 with it here in California. And when I decided I was moving out here, I started selling a bunch of stuff. And when I posted that on Facebook, I got a message when I bought it. I got a message from Conway. He's like, if you ever going to sell that thing, let me know. So that's what I did. I was like, well, man, I'm about to pack my whole life up and move. So now's your chance. And I actually dropped it off, met up with him on the side of the interstate on my way to Taylor's house with Shane and sold him the rocket. It's so beautifully done too. The guy had a body shop painted. It is a pretty, pretty rocket. So I'm glad it's in the hands of somebody who's going to fly it. Yeah,
he will. He'll put it up at some point.
I gotta get another one sometime, but I want a kit. I want an unbuilt one, and I know when they come up, they're ungodly expensive. But if you come across any Dynacom or AirX kits that aren't built yet, hit my inbox. I'll make it work.
That's good stuff. I appreciate the history that you guys have, and you know how excited you were about, you know, the hobby to begin with. And, you know, even the stories that you guys talk about the roller coasters and things like that. It's like, yeah, I get those passions. I understand that. That's how I feel about music and heavy metal and, you know, bass guitar and stuff. And my brother and my nephew were both bassists, you know, him and his son. And they always, you know, did something for me where I just like always wanted to kind of be them. Like I still admire my big brother and I always want to kind of play bass like that guy. And even though he's more like of a jazzy funk type dude, I'm more metal, but you got to learn somewhere. And I kind of feel that rocketry and these hobbies are the same kind of way. Taylor, you know, what you do for your career. I mean, I've, you know, seen your stuff on Facebook, and then you guys are into cars too. And it just like dumbfounds me. You guys can talk to anybody else about other things, but it's the passion about rocketry that kind of adheres us together. And we have a lot of similarities. So that's what I appreciate. I mean, the level three thing that you guys were talking about in one of your first podcasts that you did, you know, Postchart is talking about, you know, the iris, the seven, the yep. 5.5-inch iris. Yeah. And I'm like, or, you know, I'm like, they built the first one. I don't know if you guys all know that. Like Dave's, it's not the first one. Mine is. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's over here.
Huh. Yeah. That is like the perfect size for an iris, because the 7.5 is rad, but the fin span becomes a problem for transport and storage and just like general existence. It's a little bit cumbersome. Mm-hmm.
5.5-inch rockets are just almost the perfect size in general. I mean, it, like I say, the K motor is a sweet spot of high power. I mean, 5.5-inch kind of, because it's like it's big enough, it feels big, but it's not so big it's like obnoxious.
Right.
You guys are talking about flying that on an M1297. I don't have any idea why I can't do that. I have two 1297s sitting here chilling, you know. I still have my electronics bay from my level three that will fit right into that because it was made for a 5.5-inch. Who knows? Might be able to fly.
Sounds like all you got left is excuses.
Yeah. It's time, man.
Argonia is a great place to do that.
It's time. You know, like, when am I going to have time to prep a rocket when, you know, I'm talking to a bunch of people? So that's one of those things.
Yeah. I just, believe me, I'm soaked in not having free time at the moment. There's actually light at the end of the tunnel, though. It's finally coming to an end. But, yeah, so if I can push us forward a little bit, though, to the next topic of discussion, it's what are, if you've had any, your failures in rocketry?
Biggest failure was that 4-inch executioner with the red pinstripe. I did it with motor eject, and I took the motor out of the rocket. I had it set up and everything. Took the ejection charge off. And for some reason, I don't know what I did when I put it back together, because I took it off to show somebody because I had a couple questions on it. I think what happened was I got a lot of grease in the hole because it was motor eject, right? So where the black powder kind of sits in the reservoir, I think, you know, I had it clogged or something, but it didn't eject. And, you know, the delay was burned, everything was fine, but, you know, it was just so much little grease that was packed in that hole that it didn't burn the ejection charge. So nosedive. I built that rocket, took a lot of cool pictures of it, went to go launch it and found it in pieces, you know, as poor Tim Van Milligan's out searching for his rocket and like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, Tim, get out of the way, get out of the way. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I almost took out Mr. Rocket with my 4-inch executioner. That was the worst day. And then I'm driving home, and then I remember this sad Cheap Trick song. I can't remember the name of the Cheap Trick song, but it's just, oh, The Flame from, you know, Cheap Trick.
I was going to say.
Like, that was the song that was playing on the radio. I was like, oh, it's so sad. My rocket just died. But, like, you know, it's so appropriate. So that was the worst experience I had in rocketry. And
I think Postart is the only one that hasn't committed the greased ejection atrocity in this group.
Okay, so that's common. Well, I hate to.
Oh yeah,
I hate to. Yeah. Oh, I hate to hear that.
Did it with my crayon, my first high power motor H97.
Oh man, yeah, it's that wasn't fun. Okay, so well, at least I know that
it was my second high power motor that I did it.
Jeez. Yeah, you're definitely not alone, and I felt very vindicated when it happened. And you know, I'm like 15 at the time or whatever. And Vern Knowles was like, oh, I think I know what happened here. And he's like, yeah, I've done that. I was like, well, if Vern's done it, then probably everybody has. I felt pretty okay after that. Plus it was a $5 Ralphco crayon. So like, it wasn't the end of the world in that case. It was a good rocket to have to sacrifice to learn that lesson. Well,
Mine was my original sumo, which I loved dearly as a 11-year-old or 12-year-old.
Yeah, that's not
But I fixed it. That was my first proper rocket repair because I didn't want it to die. So I like cobbled it all back together and painted it real nice, and it was very satisfying.
That reminds me, I got to fix my sumo. It needs new paint on the nose. It got some sick lucerne rash from getting drug in the wind.
Everybody's got to have a sumo. I mean, they're just fun.
Shane just hasn't really had any failures. As I guess you broke your fin off on your level 2, but like we've all done that too, of course.
Yeah, I've
broken two fins. That's not just a me problem.
And then I think I broke a fin on my Mean Machine when I was like 8.
Yeah. Never had ballistic flight or anything. Yeah. No Kato's. He's got a clean record so far. Which can
Maybe
only
this
mean
year,
one
huh?
thing. Yeah, so it's coming. I've never had a Kato either, so I'm just like, I got a bunch of 20-year-old AMW motors on deck. This could be quite the experience.
Yeah, you could have 20 Katos.
No. Imagine the N Katos and the Arcus.
Oh, man.
I might actually cry.
I will cry.
How are you guys doing? Is it done, or I haven't gotten that far in your updates yet?
Well, Taylor's going to build it a new nose cone from after that last flight. Mm. But yeah, that's going to be one of our AirFest flights. It's a AMW Skidmark demo motor from
2006?
2006 or 2005, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be pretty spectacular as long as it works. The OG AMW Skidmarks just hit different, man.
You can feel it in your chest.
Yeah. So, That's going to be a good time. And I also have an M2200 Skidmark that Taylor is trying to convince me to fly in my V2 at AirFest as well. We shall see. But that does kind of touched on ballistic recoveries a little bit there. But our final little thing to tap into with you is your wildest recovery story. As an example, my dad got offered a gun when we were in Tripoli, Houston, because of the wild boar where his rocket landed, and the story where I saw a man dying in a truck. Some wild, crazy things that don't even have to be rocketry related, but whatever you got.
I don't really have a wild recovery story in our
that's good.
In our local field, there's the canyon, and you know, it has a lot of haunting stories. You know, think of the Grand Canyon and then think of the SCORE Pueblo site as an area that's got a mini canyon, but it's to the point where you got like a 40-foot drop, and there's a lot of rocketeers that unfortunately have had their rockets go in there, and getting down into that canyon and then recovering them is like an all afternoon, you know, to all day event. So some rockets are still down there that have never been recovered. I thankfully have not made it into that canyon, although, you know, I'm not going to say that it won't ever happen. My coolest recovery story is, you know, when I launched that Iris that you took the video of during LDRS 38 in Argonia, Braden, that landed in the field right next to where it was launched from across the road.
That is always, that's,
you know, I just walked over
when
there.
Your wildest recovery story is a positive one. You're doing things correctly.
Yeah. So, I mean, that happened. And that was really cool.
With that out of the way, should we move on to the Patreon questions?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. So this one's on me. There's only a couple of them. I kind of forgot to post it until a few hours ago, but we do have a few. Our friend Jonathan Gabry asks, just in general, what are some of the most memorable moments, both as a vendor and a flyer?
Memorable moments. Okay. Every time you guys get an order sent to your house and you drive up to your house and you see that box standing there, tell me you're not giddy as hell that you're going to go and open that box, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like a little kid.
Well, as a vendor, I get huge boxes on my porch or in front of my garage. And it's funny to see my wife get upset, but then she also like lays off because she knows that they're not just for me. But I get that excitement every time I get an order from Locke or Mad Cow or Wild Man. And these huge boxes that I get to haul into and drag into my garage and try to sit there and go through them in inventory. And I'm holding all the parts in my hand, getting fiberglass dust everywhere. I'm like, oh yeah, look at this. This ultimate, you know. So yeah,
it's like Christmas all the time.
Every day. Yeah. So there's always something coming in at least once or twice a week. So that's great. Rocketry wise, I think my that iris on that L840, that Loki L840, that was one of my biggest achievements, because that, you know, James Russell got to see that flight, and you know, I kind of felt like I was okay to go for my level 3 at that point. And it was like, for me, I like drove back, you know, to Wellington from Argonia. And I remember sitting in the diner eating my chicken fried steak. And I'm like, yeah, I'm excited now. I think I'm ready to do this L3. And, you know, getting the plans together to do that was the next step. So that, you know, talk about good feelings. I think that was probably the biggest, like, cool moment of my rocketry career. Not even the L3 itself. The L3, you know, my wife was there holding my hand as my rocket went up. But like, the coolest feeling was like knowing that I was successful in that Iris flight. You know, perfect dual deploy, landed in the next field. I literally just left my car parked where I had parked it to launch it, and I left it there. And I literally walked into that field, put the thing together, walked back with it on my shoulder, put it in the truck, walked back, and you know, showed it to James. He's like, yeah, it looks good. Just that perfect validation. I mean, the validation was amazing. I think that was probably the best thing that I remember about everything. So, yeah.
Yeah, we run into that every once in a while. We see people that are like, I don't know if I'm ready to go for my level 3, and it's stuff like that. I'm like, you just flew a perfect flight with an L, full dual deploy, and the thing is in perfect shape. Like, you're this close to an M.
Yeah.
If you have the budget, then yeah, I'm pretty sure you're good.
There's a flip side to that coin too, right? There's some persons that go for the level 3, they're like, should probably launch a K and then an L where you get all crazy. So we can talk about that some other time.
I have a bad take on that. But yeah, it's, to me, I'm just like, you know, let people do. It's mostly because I peer pressured my dad a lot as a young one. And he had never flown anything bigger than a 29 millimeter H when he did his level 2 with a 4-inch rocket and a 3-grain 75 millimeter L.
Wow.
So.
Jeez. Well,
it is a little excessive.
Yeah, I feel that. But I mean,
it's close to home, you know?
Learning electronics is one other thing, too. And, you know, there's been a lot of level 2 flights where people do fly it with the electronics and they kind of get that under the belt, or they just understand that logic really good. And, you know, they can, but basically, there aren't a lot of level 2 flights that are always successful, you know, and they always had question marks behind them to begin with. And those are the ones that we don't want going for level 3 at our way. If you did it on the same day, then you did something right to begin with.
That's with the tap filtering, I feel safe in that. Like, anybody that's going for their level 3 in general is kind of qualified to do so by having that standard. But
that's a good point.
There have been, I'm not going to point to any specific projects, but there have been instances where I was like, okay, maybe not that one. But you know, it is what it is. You'll get that at any level. Jeremy Sims says, question for Jesse, will you ever start shipping to Australia?
I think he hit me up about that once before. That's something I just haven't done anything in the works yet. There are a lot of vendors that can ship to Australia. I know that Everdon Rocketry can do so. He does have that set up. Even though he ships from Canada, I mean, he can arrange that. So I mean, a lot of things that I do sell, he does sell too. So maybe we can use him as a resource. It depends on what you need, of course. I mean, there's some stuff that I specialize in, like Conway. Steven has his igniters with me, those loudmouth igniters. You know, because of how I have to ship those, I may not be able to ship those, but there might be some things that I do carry specifically that other vendors don't, that I might be able to work something out. That's where you have to send an email and let me look up stuff like that. But just generalization from the website, I have to kind of keep it, you know, to the continental United States and, you know, the neighboring areas currently. But I can usually do Mexico and Canada pretty easy. I've shipped some stuff.
I can't imagine.
So imagine that.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. The customs paperwork for like declaring that there's rocketry related objects, I feel like probably raises some flags.
Well, I mean, keep the stuff as hobby. I mean, most things can be sent as model kits, you know, but motors and stuff like that, true. I don't even sell yet. So, I mean, I can't even dabble in that yet. You know, I'm not going to sit there and try to compete with, like, you know, Chris and Tim and all these other guys that carry motors, because that's not my specialty. So,
right.
And when I go to Argonia, I'm usually sitting there with Mark Logan, right? So Mark's got all the motors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you hit up Mark definitely for the motor. He's usually got, you know, what most of those flyers will need, you know, especially at the fun flies. And I'll go out there and, you know, I have a different array of kits because, you know, I have a different collection of stuff. So I try to work with everybody, try to partner with them at least. I'll watch their stuff while they go fly something sometimes. So, you know, that's the trustworthiness that I want, you know, with all my partners too. So,
well, this, a rest in peace shout out to our dearly departed Gorilla Rocket Motors. Speaking of motors going to Australia, he was developing 6-inch O motors that were reloadable snap ring motors that were flying in Australia. They had like 19 grains or something crazy like that for shipping restrictions, but I don't know what's up with that. Jim Harris sold it, and allegedly they were going to come back, but cool green snap wearing hardware with a pretty good sparky, and waxing poetic here, but whoever owns Gorilla Rocket Motors now, and I'm going to talk to Daniel Avila while we're here, from the owner of Polecat. Come on, guys. Bring it on back. Bring it home. Anyway.
Yeah.
Back on topic. Alex asks, he doesn't put his last name on the Patreon, so I never tend to say it out loud during the show, but Jesse, what is your favorite flight you've personally flown? I think we've already touched on that.
That
and which is your favorite? Which is your favorite you've witnessed someone else fly?
All right, so that's Krichenko. I'll say it. I can say his name because I hang out with Alex a lot. But yeah, that's Alex K. But anyway, you know, the favorite one I think was you know, I've seen a lot of cool flights, and this is going to be kind of mundane, but I think it was when Juan Cedillo flew his level 3 on a Skinwalker. I want to say he was number 24. And he flew it on a M1845 New Thunder. I know how you guys feel about New Thunders too. But I don't know, man. Like, there was just something about that flight that day that was just celebratory, because I flew my Skinwalker in an M1845 New Thunder at AirFest. I think it was the last flight of AirFest in 2021. What number was that? I want to say it. I can't remember what AirFest that was. But yeah, I flew that rocket. And then, you know, he flew it for his level 3, you know, that next spring. And I don't know, there was just something about like the celebration that day, like afterwards, that it just felt good that, like, you know, somebody else kind of did the same thing and, you know, it went perfect and he got his level 3. And I don't know, that was probably my favorite launch that somebody else flew. And then I got to say maybe George Tuma when he flew his level 3 too, because he flew that on the 1500 green, the M1500 green. And I want to say it was an AGM Pike. Yeah, it was an AGM Pike, a 6-inch that he had a Wildman make, but I think he cut his own fins. So like it was just Wildman parts, but I think he made that rocket himself, and boy, that was exquisite. But those two particular flights kind of stand out, you know, my homeboys doing their own thing. So I think those are probably my favorite. Alex, I don't need your spicy igniters. I have Conway igniters. So what's up? Let's go.
Oh yeah. I should say he, at the end of that message, asked when they're drag racing Skinwalkers. So, hey,
so, Adam Nippa, who just recently flew for his level 3, I think is going to do that again. I think Jim Jarvis was his tap, along with somebody else from, you know, the Tripoli North Texas site. He wants to drag race too. So if there's any Skinwalker people that want to drag race, let's get together and chat about that before, so we all, you know which motors that we need to get for this endeavor. So, but I'm ready. My Skinwalker's ready. He's still got the electronics bay, and we'll just charge up the batteries and go. You know?
I was gonna say I should clarify the record on the New Thunder hate. That's all Taylor. Okay. The M1780 rips. I've never flown any other New Thunder motors, but Taylor's just a hardcore, like, purist of the original Blue Thunder. It's all the K1100s have gone straight to his head.
Although,
honestly,
I must say the last K1100 didn't hit quite the same. So
yeah, we're flopping the wrong way on that. Actually, he's not like, you know, New Thunder's looking kind of good. He's like, it all just is kind of looking not good anymore.
No, the Super Thunder always hits though. Yeah, so
he's also the guy over here saying the Wildman Mini Cherokee is too small for him. He doesn't do these tiny baby rockets.
I just wanted to offer Matt my kit in case he wasn't going to get one.
A likely story.
I got one.
Yeah, shout out to Tim from Wildman, actually. Oh, did you buy one?
I did. I got it, you know, while he was announcing it. Nice. I have it on my bench. I'm not going to resell that one. That one's for me, you know. I will keep some for me.
It was a crazy deal.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
But even go buy it at its regular price. It's still under $100, right? I mean, go get one. They're worth having.
It's like $78. Oh, yeah.
Go visit that. Go get one of those, because it looks cool.
We talked about last time I saw you in person, we talked about somebody had like asked if I was getting free West Systems because I used it like so prominently on camera. So I do disclose specifically when things get sent to me for free. So yes, Tim sent me and Shane and Taylor and Matt each a Mini Cherokee. So shout out to Tim. Thank you very much. I built mine pretty much instantly. Did it on a live stream the other night. I still got to do fillets though.
I've gotten some things, you know, not necessarily for free, but you know, you got to put in the work to them too. But I feel like I've done my work to, like, you know, make the aesthetics work so that they can be photographed and stuff like that. But once that's done, once those initial photographs are taken, I will put it through hell and high water. So
that's what, during that live stream, I was like, if we can accumulate enough for the Punisher Fund during this live stream, I will go get an I-205 for this first flight and we will probably never see this thing again. But didn't get there. So I'm going to do probably a G-138 because that motor rules. But
oh, wow. Yeah, those are fun.
That is a good motor.
Yeah. That was my Sumo's first flight.
I just remembered that I have a G-25 I've been sitting on for years. That would probably be light enough, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's really light. I don't know. I was considering not bringing it to you since it's baby stuff, you know, and you're not interested.
Oh, my gosh. I just built a little Nike Smoke, so.
Is it 2.6? It's not that little.
Well, it's only like, it's under 2 pounds. That's pretty small.
You build one 12-inch rocket and one 9-inch rocket, and suddenly
oh my,
everything's worthless. It's unbelievable, man.
You're making me sound like a big
I think we all need to build some Star Troopers from Estes.
Oh, wow.
Or some gnomes or something.
What's a Star Trooper?
Yeah, gnomes. There you go. It's the Star Trooper.
I know a gnome. That was a favorite.
No, I'm just get back to some basics here, you know, so. I mean,
I still,
where is that thing? Like this Power Patrol, like I built this with my wife at the kitchen table once because she was wanting to build something and, you know, I couldn't tell her no. So we just built this real quick and I glued mine together. Although with these particular ones, like you don't have to, but she didn't glue hers together, but this one's glued together. And I've launched it a few times. It still looks pretty good. I mean, I like flying these little cheesy ones sometimes. We have a local guy that lets us fly in the park he doesn't own the park, but like he owns the land next to the park. So we'll launch them from the park and then they go into his land, which is really cool. Cause like, you know, we can just go over there and like launch whenever we want to now. So I have like a local place that we can go and shoot these off. And sometimes my wife and I will just go do that and just hang out. It's kind of been fun. I want her to build a goblin to do a level one on.
Oh yeah.
Bought her one. She hasn't really messed with it yet, but she's like, let's go build my goblin. I was like, no, you got to do that yourself. I can't help you with that. She doesn't quite get that yet. So yeah,
we'll figure it out. I was like, Taylor, Sam's rocket, how's that project coming?
Yeah. She wants me to supervise and I haven't had time. So she's like, when can we build the rocket? And I'm like, well, first of all, you're building the rocket. I'm just going to tell you what stop you from a disaster. Otherwise you're going to figure it out yourself. But yeah, she just wants to do a really cool paint job. She's all artsy.
See, my wife can install flooring. She can do all kinds of stuff. Like there's some stuff around the house that she won't let me do. Like she can patch holes in the wall, you know, from when Jesse has a couple too many drinks and falls down the stairs. But, you know, so she can do whatever she needs to do around the house. Right. But, you know, she just wants to kind of do this together. And like, I guess the only way for me to build a goblin with you is if I just build another one. But you know what I've never done is my goblin I built in 2018 when they kind of first came out. And that's not ready to fly on a K. I would not be confident flying that one on a K, but I can build one that can.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe I can do that with her. See, we're thinking out loud.
Yeah, that'd be
thinking
cool.
Out loud.
There you go. Yeah, see, I was going to say, as far as building Estes stuff goes, I have a Star Orbiter, and I really want to just like, I believe it's BT-60 yeah. tubes that you can just kind of slide a 38mm motor tube into and like pseudo minimum diameter. So just wrap it in glass and do some tip to tip and fly it on something dumb.
It's been done before.
Because I bought it at Michael's, like you were saying earlier, actually. Rest in peace to those 40% off coupons. Yeah. I think I paid like $8 for that thing.
Yeah. Hobby Lobby is doing their sales, you know, around this time. So if you're building model rockets, go visit your Hobby Lobbies because they have a bunch of clearance deals now, but you can, you know, wipe out their current stock because I'm excited to see what they might get. Cause apparently they have another deal with Estes where Estes is going to have some stuff that Hobby Lobby stores will sell that won't be in their catalog. I don't know where you heard that from, but yeah.
Oh, wow.
So maybe, you know,
interesting.
Hey, I want to get people started in the hobby.
Shane, we should go check it out.
I want to get people started in the hobby. If they, you know, have insider information like that, then let's go pick out a kit and a starter set, you know, get your kids involved. It's fun stuff. You'll do it for the rest of your lives. Well, you did.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So
we can't get away no matter how hard we try. But yeah. Well, that we're at the end of all the Patreon questions, and unless Taylor or Shane, you have any questions for Jesse?
I don't think so. Yeah, I rambled along a lot. Thanks a lot for letting me go on. I mean, I did this a lot.
You made it easy on us this time.
So
we got to just sit back and watch the time go by. It was awesome. But yeah, thanks for being here, man. It was a good good time. When I first started pitching around the idea of launching the podcast, I was like, I really hope the Rocketry Show guys don't like get upset that we're like, look, we can do podcast things. And it was just like the most horrific attempt. Episode one is intolerable because we just...
Now, I liked it actually, because I learned a lot about you guys on that and how your project started, how you all met, and LDRS 38 was a thing for you guys. I mean, that took me back a little bit. It's like, oh yeah, I'm kind of in that realm with, you know, getting back into rocketry. That's when I started out doing my things. Yeah. So it was good to hear. So, I mean, I know you're talking about like production quality and stuff like that, but like, I mean, people want something to listen to, and that's the key point right here. I mean, the podcast that we have, it is syndicated. I mean, CG's a, you know, production company, kind of owns the rights to a lot of that stuff. And he does a lot of editing on the show and stuff like that. And I mean, the work that he does with the podcast is, you know, professional grade. I mean, he you know, he's an audio engineer. He makes electronics to normalize voice and everything. And I mean, I know that we do this with our particular enhancements that we have, right? But I mean, he literally does it, you know, with stuff that he's created. It's insane how crazy CG is at being so dang smart. I mean, the content that we put out, you know, we have a good listener base. We have a lot of supporters as well. And I don't want to be in competition with anybody in my rocketry hobby. I mean, this is all stuff that we all share together. And when you guys came out with that, the first thing I didn't think about was like, oh, dang, I got competition with them. The first thing I thought about was I get to hear more people talk about rocketry. And that's what I really came out with. They'll listen to this too. There's a little kid who has one on Spotify called Realm Rocketry. I don't know if you're listening to this kid yet. I listen to him because it's fun to just like hear somebody that's so inspired about rocketry at that age, like he wants to do a podcast too, talk about things. And he went through the entire, you know, NAR rule book and everything. And I'm just like listening to this kid. I'm like,
oh, wow.
You know what? I didn't realize that. So, you know, it's good stuff. I mean, everybody learns some way, and just seeing things like that inspires me. And I could sit here and ramble with you guys forever. So whenever you want to talk more crap, just give me a buzz. I'll sit in with you. So that's what we do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we'd be able to have you for episodes where we just have our general topics of discussion, have a guest co-hosting.
Be a good crutch for when we can't think of anything to talk about.
Right.
See, that's the thing with all of us is that we'll always have something to talk about. I mean, I can't go to a dinner with somebody at a rocketry event and not sit there for more than 2 hours. I mean, we've been on this right now for over 90 minutes, but every time I go to dinner with somebody, it's always a 2 to 3 hour, you know, sit down at that table. You know, I even have to tell the host or hostess sometimes, like, we're going to be here a while. Are you okay with that? You know, sometimes they'll say, well,
right.
You know, we usually get busy about 9 o'clock or whatever. It's like, okay, well, you know, we'll buy more drinks. So,
yeah, right? Exactly.
So margarita's on me next time. So let's make that happen.
All right. Sounds good.
All right, guys.
Well, cool. In that light, my name is Braden Carlson. You can find me here on YouTube at Rocket Vlogs, or you can find me on Instagram at BigB1011.
My name is Taylor Jesse, and you can find me on YouTube at The Rocket Channel.
My name is Shane, or as you might know me, Postart, and you can find me on YouTube at Postart Propulsions.
And I'm Jesse Yu. I'm Model Rocket Guy. You can see me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Model Rocket Guy. Simple.
We are the Anti-Gravity Group, featuring Jesse this time, and this is the Anti-Gravity Group podcast. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time.